On a toujours besoin de volontaires, mais évidemment les choses se passent du mieux que possible. On poursuit avec une autre un autre podcast d'une personne qui nous parle en anglais sur la situation en Iran. Bonne écoute.
First of all, we are going to share with you a little bit of context of the, let's say, most recent uprisings in Iran, and to talk about what is the precedent of this event, and then we are going to talk a little bit about why this has been important in the Middle East, and what are the different effects or influences that it is going to have in the geopolitical relations in this zone and also in the Occident, in the West. And we are going to talk also about how the Western powers, governors, have reacted to this last uprising and why it has been so. Well, this is our analysis. And then at the end, we are going to talk about the Iranian diaspora or in opposition to the regime and the different perspectives they have had on the uprising and how they have been reacting and moving in this era.
We have presented us on the webpage. I am from an Iranian very small collective, Andishava Peikar, which are some exiled people around Europe and other countries. Actually, we wanted to speak in German. It's easier for me. I'm very sorry. I don't speak very well in English, but I hope you understand me. I just want to warn you, if you are here to get any answer, we cannot give you any. So you can leave. Because we don't have any answer. That's a question to be the future is a question of us all. So we have to find it together. And the other thing is, if you think Iranian opposition Iranians are all the same, not only you're wrong, but also is naive, because we are exactly like Germans, like French, like we are the different people with different interests. So the analysis we are giving you now, it is ours. Is not from any other person. Maybe you find lots of people that are thinking the different way. It's valid, but it is ours. So you have had today, maybe we have here three different Iranian meeting. Maybe you see three different Iranian perspective. I wouldn't speak French, therefore I wasn't today on the morning here. Maybe some of you were here, and it has to be another one in afternoon. So there are different point of views. Maybe we have to discuss about it all together. I repeat always to all together, because I think the fight is the fight of us all together. Let's go back to our presentation. To understand what's happening in Iran, we have to go back a bit in the history. I don't go back 2,500 years, but we have to see at the beginning of the time, which is Iran changing the situation. The capitalism is coming in Iran. It's growing in Iran, etc. To clear that all, I want you to have in your mind, Iran is a multi ethnic country. There is no Iran. Iran is like an imagination. We have copied one map there. The problem is only that's old, so the numbers on that doesn't is not correct. For instance, you see Baluchis 1 million. There are for sure more than 3 million today in Iran. Or the Arab community is much larger than it is there. But I wanted you to know that Iran is like different culture, different languages.
And religions.
And even different religion. So it's not one country with one history. We come back to this point during the presentation. As I told you, I want to go back to the 1953 COP against of Mossadegh, who nationalized petroleum in Iran legally. I call legally because the petroleum of Iran was nationalized after a long fight of working class and the other people in Iran. So it is like a state translation of what the people in Iran wanted. At this moment, the COP in Iran made by United States and Britons had the reason to secure oil for Western countries. But the Shah of Iran, who came again in power in Iran with this COP, produced a society in Iran which we didn't know before. We see the construction of a kind of political police in Iran, Savak, which was like a mouse in your house, which is always controlling you. So it was a control everywhere. Even I can remember University of Tehran. There is a book about the student movement in 50s and 60s in Iran. The student, if they wanted to read some books, and I can make an anecdote for you to know, we call ourselves, lots of us were like Muslims who had a kind of liberation theology, but others were Marxists. But when we talk about Marxism, we even didn't have a manifesto. So it was 2-3 books which you could find. I can remember as I started to be active, the books in Iran were like a paper of A1, which it was a complete book printed on that, very, very thin paper, so you could transport it to Iran in your bag. It was everything forbidden. So you could even land in a prison because of reading, not writing, reading a pamphlet. So in the University of Tehran, there was like a stair room, and you had like a podest. And if you've been there, it was a bigger place like here. The students used to sit on the ground and put their jacket on their head so nobody could see who they are and read 10 pages of a book. We call, just to example, State and Revolution from Lenin. So you had heard in university, State of Revolution is in the stairs. So you've been going there, taking your jacket over your head, and you read 10 pages, then you move your place and read another 10 pages. It was the situation we had in Iran. So if you hear about Iranian politicians, Iranian activists, after what much of us can explain you how radical we've been, how lefty we've been, actually it was nothing. We've been radical because the life pushed us to be radical. It wasn't theoretical. Lots of us weren't theoretical activists. So we didn't, even in 79, we had a prisoner who write, he have seen a book about capitalism in Soviet Union, and he wished before he is arrested could have been reading this book. So it's not, I just always tell you to have an imagination, because we are talking about a country which liberation, to be free, was always, since 1953, was a wish of the people. So I come back to this movement, actual movement, and you see that is what the reflection of this nearly 100 years. I'm talking about a time which you have resistance in whole Middle East. You have resistance in Turkey, in Iraq, in Iran, in Pakistan, in Yemen, in Eritrea, and Egypt. You have resistance. I don't want to talk about Palestine, which it is the dignity of Middle East. So we have resistance everywhere. At the same time, we are in the time which United States lose a war in Vietnam, lose a war in Korea, lose a war in Cambodia. So the things have to change. We have in Iran a big working movement. We see the people, for instance, with the rising of price of buses in the cities, a huge student movement is in Tehran. So you see everywhere is movement in Iran too. And beside of this, the things, we have two very big guerrilla groups in Iran, Fidayin of the people of Iran and Mujahideen of the people of Iran. So we have these two guerrilla group and mass movement and lots of demonstration in 76, 77, 78. So the Western countries have to think an answer to this what's happening in Iran. I just put you some times. It's the
Ouj chi mishe bala? The high point.
In the highest point of these demonstrations, you have seen in Tehran like hundreds of thousands of people going against of the Shah on the street and always willing freedom and bread was a point which we have always heard on the streets. I am actually from this generation. So we've been, at the moment, we've seen some changes. I just, as I tell you, I put some dates. 23rd of September, 78, after 15 years, Khomeini goes to France from Iraq. He was 15 years, like, exiled in Iraq, and he changed and goes to Paris. Why he goes to Paris? One of the leaders of the so-called reformist in Iran says, they argumented to Khomeini that in France we have a good diplomatic possibility, so it's better we go to Iraq. Afterwards, Dr. Yazdi, who was a translator of Khomeini in Paris, and he was living long years in the United States, studied in the United States, and he had a United States nationality. He was like a berater?
Reporter?
No, berater. Advisor. He was like advisor of Khomeini in Paris. We have read afterwards, he used to visit North American ambassador sometimes, some days in the week to drink a coffee. What happened there, we don't know. And from 4th to 7th of January, 79, we are talking about weeks. 79, it was in Caribbean island, Guadeloupe, a meeting called by French government, and it was with Germans. Helmut Schmidt was there, like from the United States, from England. There were representatives there, and they spoke about Iran. It seems they decided the Shah of Iran has to leave the country, because if not, it would have been a revolution. So, 7th of January, finished this meeting. At 16th of January, Shah leaves Iran. So the Shah of Iran leaves the country, and some days later, on 21st of January, Khomeini flies from Paris to Tehran. At 11th of February, the army of Iran, after 2 days of street fighting and uprising of people's uprising, the army of Iran declared themselves solidarities to the revolution. So they say they won't fight against the revolution. The same army which killed hundreds of people in demonstrations some days ago, all suddenly is very solidarity with people, etc. And the all sudden, after 2 days, they declare the revolution is finished. I can remember the people of Khomeini were off the street and tried to take the guns of the people because people attacked military bases and took the guns. So Khomeini's people started at 12th of January to February to take the guns from the people back. So it is the beginning of Islamic Republic of Iran. Just some months later, like a show referendum, government of Iran makes a referendum and asks the people, do you want Islamic Republic of Iran or the Shah to back to Iran? So it's clear people who don't know what is this Islamic Republic of Iran, but they know they didn't want the Shah. Government of Iran, later government of Iran says 98% of people voted to yes to Islamic Republic of Iran. To that, what they didn't even know what that is. It's the kind we see that Islamic Republic was built on the top of a movement, a huge movement, maybe the biggest movement of last century, which it has been happened. You could go to a smaller village in Iran, people were uprising against the Shah because of all the problems they had. So I leave it here. It's very short what I'm trying to tell you so that we have an imagination about what we are talking. As I told you, 11th of January is the revolution in Iran. But what happens is that the silent cemetery of the United States in the Middle East is broken. So in the same time, we have always to think in the Middle East there was a problem of Soviet Union, the nearness of Iraq to Soviet Union, and the United States and West countries who didn't want any danger of the what they call it communism in the Middle East. So they were all interested that Iranian government is taking care of the Middle East. I come back again to this point. But anyhow, this time it's changing. And this change goes later on. We see that lots of American companies leave Iran, but Germans come in. So it doesn't change a lot. Only the companies change. At the end of January, all of a sudden, Khomeini start to talk about the Islamic rope laws so that the women are not allowed to go to work without covering their hair because their hair has a kind of wave, which the man got problem, sexual problem. So it's the first reason that the woman... Some days, I'm talking about days, some days later, we've seen the biggest women march in Iran until today. 100,000 of women go off the street, and it's a big fight. Very small groups of lefties support them, but even, just give you an example, the sister party of Soviet Union, the so-called Tudeh Party, calls, it is what I personally got, because I came from this demonstration, and somebody told me, where have you been? I told him, to the women demonstration, and he called, tells me, how you go, some prostitutes are demonstrating, and you go and support them? I just want to tell you, the situation turns at the moment of revolution. Lots of lefties start to rethink what they wanted. Lots of the things we are seeing today too. So we go back when we talk about today. At the north of Iran, we have, I told you about different ethnics. At the north of Iran, we have Turkoman Sahara. Turkoman Sahara is a part of eastern part of Caspian Sea. The people living there are Turkmens. They speak Turkmenish. They see even like Eastern people. They have like longer eyes. They are very famous. Their horses are very famous worldwide. They were very fighter
people.
But they have a big field, very, very plant field, which it is produced cotton and corns. This big field, on the time of the Shah, was taken from the people, and the great owners of land were producing. People retook their land and or occupied them, but they built the Soviets. So we had a Soviet, center of Soviets of Turkmens in this part. Government of Iran kidnaps the leader, four leaders of them, and some days later they are dead under a bridge. People rise up, and government of Iran sends the tanks and even bombarded in Bandar Turkmen, that is a small, very small port, Turkmen port, and even bombarded the mosque of the city, the Islamic government. So we have to imagine this Islamic fundamentalist who is bombarding mosques. But it wasn't the last one. At 26th of the March, Iranian government attacks south of Iran in Khuzestan. You will hear afterwards again about Ahvaz. They had like culture centers in Ahvaz, in some other parts of Arabic community. The government of Iran sometimes attacked them since February, but the biggest one is at 26th of March. They kill hundreds of people to secure the flowing of oil to export the oil. So Arab people were at this moment, the government of Iran start to attack Arab people, which it is until today, and I'm talking until today, I will come back again to this point, until today, if one Arab worker stand up, he would be accused to be separatist. So we see this ethnic problems are at some point very hard from the beginning of Islamic Republic. It's not the last one. In Kurdistan, we saw during the revolution and after the revolution, cities organized themselves. We have like Soviets in the cities, in small groups or bigger groups, just gather together and organize their life. Government of Iran tries to attack them once they circulate Sanandaj for 100 days and close the water, it's like a Middle Age war against the Kurdish people. From that time until today, Kurdistan is like a military base. It doesn't matter where you go in Kurdistan, Iran, you see military bases and like a Damocles sword is on the top of the head of Kurdish people.
But we have to consider that what we are talking about, these repression of the ethnic minorities in Iran, the minorized ethnics, better say, is not only for the Islamic Republic, but we have been seeing it like 400 years before it also, because in the time of the first king of the Pahlavi dynasty, which is Reza Khan, in his times, you have small resistance movements of different ethnical groups that are living, for example, in Azerbaijan, in Kurdistan, in Balochistan, also in Khuzestan. So you have different movements that are trying to gain their autonomy, and they are always suppressed and repressed very violently by the state. Even Reza Shah makes some of the ethnical groups, for example, move from where their land is to other places so that they are separated and they cannot organize. And in the times of the son, who is Muhammad Reza, you also have the same stuff. I mean, you had this independent Republic of Mahabad, for example, that was in Kurdistan and it was repressed. Then you have... But you know why this happens also? Because you have to consider that what you saw in the map of Iran actually is that Iran has frontiers with other ethnical groups. For example, the Turkmen Sahra people, they are part of the Turkmenistan. Or the Baluchi people in the southeast are part of Balochistan, which is also in Pakistan part of it. Or the Azeris, part of Azerbaijan. So it's like different ethnical groups living on the frontiers and always trying to organize their own resistance. So they have been always repressed. And this, what Bahram is saying about the Islamic Republic, is like the most, not the most recent manifestation, but one of the most recent manifestations of this.
In September 80s, after hundreds of military attack between Iran and Iraqi government, officially we have the Iran-Iraq war. I call officially because Iran-Iraq war was once in 1973-74. We had about three islands in the Gulf of Persia, which it was a war between Iran and Iraq, which it finished by contract in Algiers. So in 1975 was finished the war, but the war would come, had to come again, because Iran and Iraq, both of them, to resolve their own internal problem, needed an enemy, an outer enemy. So this enemy couldn't be anyone else than Iraq because they have very similar interests. So again, to imagination, at that time, before United States attacked Iraq, we had three economical power in Middle East. It was Israel, Iran, and Iraq. They were all friends and fine, an enemy in the same time. So you even see today the fight between Iran and Israel, which mostly in Europe, they try to sell it like ethnic problem. There is no ethnic problem. There is economic interests between both of them. So we come back again, and I show you in the maps where are these interests in Middle East. So Iran and Iraq start a war, and it's another point that a big part of Iranian lefties turn their politics and try to help the government. Once it happened at American embassy was occupied in Tehran, I couldn't say mostly, but lots of Iranian lefties all suddenly went to American embassy to demonstrate against of the biggest imperialists and didn't close their eyes who is occupying this embassy. The same is happening again at that time. I just telling you, maybe we discuss even the same situation which we had, like now you see in Ukraine. One country attacked the others, and you are there, and people ask you which government you support. At that time, very small groups, big groups, but very small part of Iranian lefties decide to boycott the war between Iran and Iraq. I can remember our group, we boycotted the war because we always told between us and Iraqian working class, there is no war. And we had the consigna?
A slogan?
Slogan, turn your gun to your own government. So we haven't been pacifist. We didn't want the war with the workers in Iraq. And this war was like a instrument in the hand of the Iranian government so they could call anybody who was against of them like fifth column of Iraq in Iran. So you've been, especially Arab people were at that time repressed hardly. They were forced, moved to other part of the Iran because the government wanted to resolve the problem. And always they said, Arabs are like Iraqian support in Iran, and they want to separate Arabian part of Iran. So this nationalism at that time was that big that even I can go back to me myself, even in my own home, I was a fatherland traitor. Traitor. So this was in the society. Lots of our comrades were being shot, killed, because they made propaganda against of the war. So I can again remember at the nights which it was a red alarm, so it was clear Iraqis airplanes are in Iran. We used to go out and put pamphlets, papers, and the house of people, because it was the best time. We knew there is no police on the street, so we used this situation. And it was all the time which goes until 88. I just want to open a parenthesis. In any war, it doesn't matter which war, between so-called nations, you have losers and you have people that make money. The pictures you see, the real users are indigenous peoples in Iran, in Iraq, in Kurdistan, in both of countries, but the winner of the war is Saddam Hussein, which Saudis give him a present of gold Kalashnikov. So a golden Kalashnikov. It is not only a present of money, it's a present of a power. So he gets in Middle East like the man who is fighting against not Arab, non-Arabs. You see in the middle some palaces? You have ever, you always heard about fundamentalists in Iran and people who are very religion, that are the religion people, very religion people. Religious people. They are the winner of the war. So it cannot be for a lefty. It doesn't matter how you call him. You can call him communist, you can call him anarchist, you can call him how you want. For the lefties, cannot be the question of governments. For us, was and is always the question, who is winning which war? And we don't have any war but class war. And we saw in Iran, people lost everything. Thousands and thousands of people are dead, but the money, and especially gun industry, like Rheinmetall, like Mercedes-Benz, and French companies, they are the winner of this war. At this time of the war, you have exportation of guns to Iran and to Iraq in the same time from all these countries. Even United States sold Iran guns. Maybe you remember an Iran-Contra affair, which Iran got gun, United States gun, and paid and Contras in Nicaragua. So that is very important for us to see it. Therefore, people you see today in Iran, they go on the street, they put behind this nationalism. For Iranian people, you hear always on the streets of Iran that Baluchis, they declare themselves solidary to Kurdish people, to Turkish people in Iran, because it is what we understood during the last 43 years. In 82, the government of Iran has a situation which it is very special. The biggest opposition group of Iran, an Islamic group called Mujahideen, which they are now in Albania, they have the military base there, which they work with lot with American right wings, like Giuliani, like they are their friends. They invite them always to their meeting. At that time, there have been a kind of popular opposition in Iran. They call a demonstration, and they are participating about 500,000 people. The government attacks, Mujahideen take the gun and attack. It is like a kind of sometimes military demonstration in Tehran. At the same night, the government of Iran starts a repression that we have it maybe until today, but mostly until 88, I come back, which in the same night, they executed 23 persons, some of them, like Said Soltanpour, a poet, member of Fedayeen guerrilla of Iran, which he was arrested some months ago in his wedding. Thank you. In his wedding, Ali Reza Rahmani Shastani, who was a member of Paykar organization, who was Baluchi, was representing a lot of Baluchi people. He was even in the first election in Iran voted. He was voted by the people. He was arrested about 5 months earlier. He was executed at this time. Mohsen Fazel, who was the same member of Baker organization, but he was member of PLO, an Iranian who was 10 years in Palestine. He came back to Iran at the time of revolution, wanted to go back to Palestine. They captured him outside of the embassy of Syria, and after 6 months, they executed at this day, and they told they are executed all because they've been in this demonstration. It is a new quality. It doesn't mean that the Iranian government didn't kill the lefties of the at least 2-3 years earlier. But in this day, we are seeing a kind of open repression. So Iranian government used to execute from this day about, I cannot give you a number, but a kind of newspaper, officially newspaper, full, one page full of name of executed from last night. We have executions which, in the prison I was myself, at the other side of the wall, they used to execute every night. So we used to call, count the last shot, like 1, 2, 3, 5. And they didn't do it without declaring it. They wanted that we know they execute. They wanted the society to be paralyzed, to be in terror, so they can't move themselves. Until 88, at 20th of July, it is a declaration of United Nations, and it is the freedom between Iran and Iraq, or peace between Iran and Iraq, or how we can call it. Anyhow, at this time, they decide to clean the word they use, to clean the prisons. Prisoners who've been accused to anything, and he has to stay there 2 years, 3 years, 10 years, they've been called again, and they ask them three questions. Do you believe in Islamic Republic? Are you Muslim? Do you pray or not? With these three questions, they told the people, go to the left, go to the right. And we see again a kind of massacre in the prisoners of Iran, which it is in Iran, there is no same president.
It has no precedence.
The reason is that they want to make a society. The government want to make sure there is no resistance when they do something. I would like to go back to this point, because we have heard comrades from Colombia here, comrades from Chile, and lots of other countries like Ecuador, Peru, that is the same reason why the people go on the street. And these reasons, you see in Chile, for instance, they had to kill 30,000 people to try to import, to reconstruct the capitalism to what they call neoliberalism. So that is, you see in Argentina, the same. They don't kill because they would like to kill. They kill us because they want to do something and we are disturbing. So they don't want people to rise up, to resist, and therefore they have to make a fear on the society. I would like to explain you what they wanted to do. At this time, is election in Iran, and Mr. Rafsanjani, who is called as like a liberal president of Iran, wanted to make he was candidate, and he talks to reconstruct Silk Road. Silk Road is very beautiful. It's like you go back to the history, Silk Road. But under this word, under this beautiful word, you are seeing what you see today in Mexico. You've heard for sure, here it was the first day of meeting, some presentation about Istmo de Tehuantepec, which it is a connection between Gulf of Mexico and Pacific, which is building like some road, some autobahn, and some railways. But at the same time, you would have some places which there are factories there, which the landless laws don't work. So we have seen it first time in the history, maybe in north of Mexico, between United States and Mexico, they cut the road so the migrant couldn't go to the other side, because at the other side they could earn $15 an hour, and in Mexico they could earn $2 a day. So they closed the way and they made these places, which they call Zona de Maquiladores. So you have these manufacturers there, and the worker has to work there cheap. And these places usually don't pay taxes. They export. They are mostly to build something to export. Usually they become some half-finished product. They finish it and sell it else. So to doing this kind of projection means you need worker. You need cheap worker. The cheap worker comes because people from Oaxaca in south of Mexico have to be moved to the north of Mexico, to the frontier of United States, to work there. It means they don't have any social network, which they had in their own villages, which they had in their own cities. We hear today in Iran that some factories don't pay 6 months, 5 months. And we ask us always here, how people live if a worker don't have 5 months of wages? How they live? And the only answer is they have a family. They have friends. So they resist. I come back again on the working class fights in Iran, and you see they fight long times, and they can only do it because there is a social network there. And this social network is always broken when people have to migrate to the other part. So Mr. Rafsanjani wanted to build a Silk Road. You see on the north of Iran, if you look from Istanbul, there is a way goes to the down part of the Caspian Sea, and then you go to Afghanistan, go to China, or you go to Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, etc. And that is the plan of Silk Road, which connected Middle East and Far East with Europe. Because in this way, the product which they have to become from China doesn't need to go around the world and turn to Holland. That's the plan which it is first time proposed. I know it. Maybe it was much more. I know it from a person whose name is Lyndon LaRouche. I don't know if I put... That's his proposal. It's from 86. Lyndon LaRouche proposed to build dry bridges. These dry bridges have the same function as I told you. So we have bridges, we have roads, you build factories, and the product comes from, we say, Indian or China, and goes the road through these roads to come to Europe, and they can complete the construction of the product, and when it's in Europe, it's the cheapest way to produce. Because they cannot make cheaper the costs they have for machines. The only place they can make cheaper is the cost of the working class. So they have to produce cheap working class to produce it to have more interest. If you even look at this plan, 86, you see how Yugoslavian, the road goes from Europe to Yugoslavian, how Yugoslavian was war, you go to Caucasian, it was war, you go to Turkey, Iran, Afghanistan, it was always war. They make war. It is capitalism. We don't have capitalism without war. If it's not war in Switzerland, it is war in Afghanistan. So Switzerland can sell them guns. But the war is there. And that's what they did. I just take it. I'm afraid that you think maybe that they make a plan and they do it anyhow. It's not like this. And I'm not naive to believe that it is like this. Capitalism has to reconstruct themselves always. So they find different proposition. It is one of them. The problem is that this one is built in Latin America. You see, the Chinese are building a road in Nicaragua and connecting Pacific and Atlantic. The Americans are building in Mexico, and you can go to until South America. The same is happening in Middle East. I go back to that. But you have always, in the same time, always a militarization of capital. You see, in Egypt, the biggest concern of Egypt is military. They are reconstructing that in Iran. Pasdaran is the biggest concern in Iran. In Pakistan, the army decides who goes, who comes, who is president, who is not president. So they're doing everywhere. You see in France, you see the demonstration. We know all how it was, the demonstration. But there are tanks, military tanks on the road. In Germany, you see the militarization of the police. So we are living this project of dry bridges or canals or corridors, as they call it, we see militarization. That is the capitalism of today, I think.
And it started with Rafsanjani.
And it started in Iran with Rafsanjani. I just put another one. It is a train who goes from Istanbul to China. It goes through Caspian Sea. So we have seen it in Uzbekistan. If you go in Uzbekistan, you see everywhere Silk Road. The Silk Road is like, I would call like a kind of capitalism of shock. So they come in a society which is happening something and put on the table, we built everything for you. It would be lots of job. It would be rich. Everybody would be rich. So people don't have time to think about it. And you see, they call it always, and it's always mixed with religion, with nationalism, and with militarization. As the Rafsanjani went, we've seen in Iran a president, Khatami. President Khatami, which it was very loved in Europe, had a proposal which at that time we haven't been able to find any map. Today, you can call in any internet website and you find the maps because they are not afraid anymore. He told he would build the biggest production road from northwest of Iran to southeast of Iran. And he told, and it was a discussion in parliament of Iran at that time, that if we don't build a bigger tax-free or free zone of industry in south of Iran, the Pakistanis would do it. I tell you, afterwards, Pakistanis and Iranis, both of them did it. So that are the propaganda. What happening? They make another railroad from northwest to southeast of Iran because they have to go to Pakistan and to India. It's another part of the 86 plan of Herdin and LaRouche. After 88, after the peace of 88, we have a society in Iran, which it is like a cemetery. Nobody talks. You are afraid. Everybody in your neighborhood is a spy, so you don't talk. It is a kind of depressed. Even if you look at the poems and writers of Iran, you see only everything which it is like. Depression is everywhere. Until 99. In 99, the Iranian writers start to criticize the government in different forms. So you find a language which it is not a language you write. So you speak about the night, and everybody knows you are talking about dictatorship. You speak about the early morning everybody knows you are talking about revolution. It is the kind of language which you find in Iran, especially historically, but at that time it was again. And the government of Iran start to kill lots of writers, especially whom they are organizers. One newspaper published an article at that time and shows that one member of secret police is engaged with this plan, and the government closes the newspaper, so it's forbidden then, and the students go on the street and protest because of this closing of this newspaper. It's not a long term. We are talking about some days, but Iranian government killed lots of students. Lots of them are disappeared, and we don't know still where they are. Their family don't know where they are. But that's the first time we see again a mass movement. Afterwards, it's again like nothing on the society until 2009. In 2009, Mr. Ahmadinejad is candidate of presidential election, and Mr. Mousavi is his
rival.
And everybody knows Mousavi would win the election, who is one of the governments. As the execution of 80s, Mousavi was prime minister. So we are not talking people from outside. They are all people of the government. But in this moment, we have internal fight of different capital groups. Mr. Mousavi loses, people go on the street and make very big mass demonstration. Mousavi goes to the demonstration, the picture you see, and calls the people, go home, we will fight legally. I can remember 88 happens the same situation in Mexico, and Cárdenas, who was a presidential candidate, until 4 o'clock in the afternoon, he was the winner. All suddenly the computers break down, and after the computers goes again, he lose. And he sends the people again at home. So you see the kind of a class who is leading this movement is a class who is not, who doesn't want to radicalize anything. So they try always to calm. People go on the street. After some days, they are repressed, and it's again quiet. Nearly 10 years later, the benzene gas prices got up in Iran. Overnight, they are 3 times more expensive than earlier. People go on the street. Very important part of these demonstrations is in Mashhad, which it is a really important religious city. People attack even the house of Imam. So you have like a mass movement, which it is not any leader there. Since that time, you don't see any leader. There are people that go on the street because they have directly problem. After some very short time, again, it was a big repression, and the movement goes down again. But in this movement, it happens another thing. During the movement, we see in some cities, it starts in Tehran, that a girl goes up of one, this you have seen here too, maybe these boxes which you have the telephone controls on side of it, or electricity contact. The girls go up of them, take their hair cover, put on a stick, and move it, shake it. It is the moment that very heroical women go and play with their own life to protest against of hijab. That's the same fight we saw at the beginning of Islamic Republic. So we see everywhere the women are a motor which they are not shut down, never. The danger of this movement for us was the demonstration started because of hunger. So you have a lower class people going on the street, And it can happen, and it happened, that lots of middle classes joined this movement and the women of Revolution Street, because the first time was in the street on Tehran named Revolution Street. The women of Revolution Street could be a reason for the middle class to change the content of the movement. I say could because it didn't happen. I'm sorry, it was again repression there, again lots of deaths, lots of prisoners, and it was again quiet. It is 2017. But you see, the time of these movements gets always shorter. So you had, at the first time, over 10 years, then 8 years, then 2 years. So it gets shorter. In 2019, again, we are seeing in Iran that the benzene price gets up and people go again on the street. The attacks on police stations, the attacking of police stations start with the election. So we see people get radical and they do something, but there are always small groups in this mass movement.
And I would like to add here that this moment, these protests are especially important because we have been seeing from the student movement, for example, that there were only students on the streets. Then you have, for the fraud in the elections, you have middle class on the street. And then afterwards, you start seeing lower class on the street. And when the women of Revolution Street get into the movement, they are bringing their own middle class war into the other class war. And then at this moment in 2019, you have like a mixture of different classes that are asking the same thing. They are demanding, their demands are getting more united. And this is the moment also that people lose once and for all their belief in the possibility of a reform in the system of the Islamic Republic. Because before that, for example, Rafsanjani is conservative. Then you have Khatami, which is reformist. Then in the elections between Ahmadinejad and Mousavi, you have a reformist against a conservative. So people still thought that if they changed the government, they could change something in the regime. But at this point in Aban, they know that it is not going to happen. And that's why that one of the most important slogans that have been that has been living on till today was created in this movement. And it says, reformers, conservatives, everything is finished with you. It say, we don't want to reform the system. We want the whole system to go down. So this is a very important moment because there is like a consciousness that was not before in the society. After this movement, after 2019, the number of people who would participate in the elections really went down. I mean, nobody else really believed that elections would do anything.
And the 8th of January, it happened something which we still don't know actually what happened. Iranian government shot one Ukrainian airplane in Iran 2 times, and all of the passengers and people working there were killed. As I tell you, we actually don't know what happened. We don't know what happened, but because it can be like and an Iranian spy brings something to the Western country, some information, so they wanted to clean it. We don't know anything about that. But we know Iranian regime told once that Americans manipulated something, so they thought that's a military airplane. So we don't know. But what we know is that in these days, some parents, some families, members of the death of the other movements came to be solidarities with the family of these people. We see it's changing something. We don't know what, but it is changing. We talked to you until this time. I wanted, before we go to the question of last movement, show you what is happening in Iran, why it is getting radical, and who is the reason that it's happening. Because usually when you repress one movement, it happens that you don't have any movement, and people, the government tries always that people forget everything is happening. But we are testimonies. We see that working class of Iran, at least the last 10 years, is always on the street. So they are not big mass movements, but you have always some workers that are somewhere demanding something. Sometimes they reach it, sometimes they are repressed, but they come again, once in north of Iran, the other one in south of Iran, the other one in west of Iran, and the other one in east of Iran. We have always working class. I believe the working class in Iran is the element who is connecting these movements together and brings. Especially, we have two points in Iran which are very interesting to know. We have like, so I told you, you can demonstrate because they don't pay you your wage 3 months, 4 months, and the owner of the factory or the government come and at least they pay you and you go back to work. But there are two points in Iran. It doesn't happen like this. It is the production center of Haftapet. It's like a huge field of sugar cane and a factory of sugar, which it was the biggest factory in Middle East, which is privatized, which the privatization, we didn't talk to you because it takes actually a long time. Privatization in Iran starts in Rafsanjani's time. I would come back again, and you had always, it doesn't matter how the government is, who's the president of Iran, who is minister of what in Iran, you have privatization. This sugarcane factory would privatize, and the workers have always problem. A big part of these workers are Arab workers and lower workers, which they are not Persian, but they are working there, and they demonstrate for something. It goes home. Next month, they demonstrate for something else. Then they pay them or they repress them. They go home. After 5 months, they come again for something else. You see it always coming back. The other one is the steel factory of Ahvaz. The steel factory of Ahvaz has another system. The workers start to build fabric committees, which these committees, they put something which is sometimes, I don't know from some other big places, maybe it is, and I don't know, but these fabric committees are a kind of half illegal organization of the worker. So they turn again and again and again. I'm happy that, no, I'm not happy actually. One of the leaders, he's here, he was arrested, he was tortured, and lots of them happened again, but they go again on the street. These two movements, these two factories, these two center of production are the symbol of, or turned to be symbol of Iranian working class movement. So I go back again when we talk about it. In 1925, we have a problem of water, especially in south of Iran, where Arab people live. The problem of water is because they want to privatize some field, which there is oil or gas, so they need to move the peasants, to move the indigenous people, so they can sell or they make cheaper this land, but the workers, they need cheap workers. So if the peasant is not peasant anymore, they have to work, and they would work what they paid. So they dry lots of rivers. They make, I don't know, hundreds of
Sad.
Dam. I can remember one article I read, and I was laughing because they made a dam on a river, there was no water. So you laugh, but it is a lot of money. There is a lot of money building it. It's not the money to produce something to sell, like they don't need to reproduce working class. Because if you need to reproduce working class, you have to pay them so they can leave and they can work for you. But they don't need it. They can only sell it. That is maybe what you call neoliberalism. That is but the reconstruction of the capitalism on the way they get cheaper the production. They don't need it because they can import from China, they import from India, they import from everywhere. I say everywhere and I mean everywhere. You have heard Iranian drones are in Ukraine, but maybe you didn't hear that 60% of these drones are built in Austria and in the United States. So you cannot tell me if the Americans don't want that Iran have it, they have it. That is the system. So it's what's happening. It is a big, huge movement in Iran, and they kill hundreds of people in this movement. And we come to, as I told you, you have always shorter times. So 1 year after, they kill one girl in Tehran. She is not Persian. She is to visit some people, and they kill her.
Mm-hmm. So you have all, most of you have heard about what happened to Gina, but something also interesting about this uprising, or afterwards it was called the Xinjiang Azadi or Zanzandi Azadi Revolution, is that what you can see here is like 43 years of demands of freedom and justice and work and bread that are getting accumulated, and they show them to you through this last uprising. Everything starts with a protest against obligatory use of hijab, and the women are very, actually they have a very important role in this revolution. But there are also other things. I mean, if you have had like the, as I told you, the students and then the middle class and then the lower class and the workers and the professors and teachers and then the pensionists on the streets all these times, and all of them come together in this uprising. But also, it's not only a matter of classes. It's even the matter of two other columns of, let's say, this uprising. One of them is the women that have also been repressed during many, many years. And then the other part is that we have to take into consideration that Gina is a Kurdish woman. So she's not a political woman. She didn't go to do anything in, let's say, to protest against the regime or anything. She was just walking on one of the streets of Tehran, and she, what happens to her, everybody knows. So, but she is a Kurdish woman, and when she is being buried, her mother says for the same time, the first time, Xinjiang Azadi, which is women, life, freedom. So this means that this is a starting point for this movement to get also an ethnical character. So you have the women, the ethnical groups, and the classes working all together in this last uprising. And I'm pretty sure that you already know what happened. No, there was lots of repression. And we have been listening to our comrades here from Chile, Colombia, and other countries in Latin America, also listening from Peru and Ecuador, that the causes of this uprising in Iran is very similar to what happens in these other countries. The ways of repression are very similar to what happens in these other countries. And I mean, of course, the numbers are a little bit higher in Iran because the it is different. But it's the same, tactic of the regime to repress the demonstrators and the opposition. And also it is important to know that the ways of resistance are very similar. For example, We have been seeing in Iran in this uprising that people are showing, for example, they are sharing on media and on independent media social networks. They are sharing videos of, for example, these people who were killed, because around 600 people were killed in this last uprising. Around 20,000 people were arrested. So from these people, you have been shown videos and small audios. Maybe they are talking about their demands, or they are dancing, they are singing. I mean, this is something that we didn't see before. And this is very important, because we have been also listening to the Zapatistas. They are talking about protecting life, about fighting for life. And this is also something that the Iranians have not been having through all these years. We have not had access to life, the most basic right of being happy, of dancing, of singing, and of having a gathering is something that Iranian people do not have access to. So this is an uprising in which life is celebrated. And that's why when the slogan of woman, life, freedom is repeated, you can hear completely that you have all the demands of all these years just abbreviated in one slogan. The freedom that has not been there for 100 years, the women question that has been addressed from the beginning of the Islamic Republic until now, and the ethnical question also is in the word freedom. And in the word life, you have everything else. You have all the demands in protest to privatization, in ecocide that they are doing, all the destruction of the ecological resources in Iran that is a part of their neoliberalism. You can see all of that is already in the word life. We want to live. We want to have something to eat. We want to have somewhere to live. We want to have our nature also in there. So, and our right to be happy, to be free. And this is such a simple thing that maybe it is a little bit strange to talk about, but this is it. And they have been showing, they have gone to the tombs of the people who were killed, and they have danced there, and they have taken cakes to their birthdays, and they have celebrated the birthdays of the killed people on their tombs, and they have been just sharing this all over, because they want to say, we want to live, and this is our fight for life. So this is something very important in this uprising that we have not been seeing on the other ones. And it was very interesting for us to listen that, for example, people from Chile or people from Colombia, they had these moments of creating happiness on the street, to wanting to be happy. So I'll stop.
So we have talked nearly about everything to this movement. But meanwhile, it's happening something else. At the day Gina Amini was killed, it was a meeting in Uzbekistan, in Samarkand, historical city. It was a Shanghai-Karta meeting in Samarkand. And Iran, who was an observator, member of Shanghai-Karta, at this day turned to a complete member of Shanghai-Karta. Some weeks later, I found this map. There are corridors, south-north corridors of Iran. Why Iranian need south-north corridors? And I think it explains us why all the sudden, all reactionary, all right-wing, all, actually I cannot use any political word for them, political of European countries are declaring themselves solidarities with the people in Iran. I come back and I show why they are not. But anyhow, at this moment, we ask us why they do it. After the membership of Iran in the Shanghai Charta means that Russia and Iran, China and Iran, have another kind of relation. This kind of relation means You always know about Russian exportation to the its products, etc. At the moment, can go only through Turkey. So what they can do to change it? The best way is they come with a train to north of Iran and goes directly to the port, which I told you they built in South Iran, Bandar Mashhad. I come again to this point because Bandar Mashhad is contrapoint of another port in Pakistan. We've seen European governments dancing from the liberal one to the fascist one as they are very solid with their solidarity with us, which it was like a, like excusing us, I don't know, like it was very rare to see. And you saw always they tried to take like Kapil Shodan.
Patronship
of the prisoners. And it was a big Iranian opposition in foreign countries. He looked for political to be patronship of a prisoner because they told they could take the prisoners out or liberate them, etc. We have never seen even one. What happened? We had four examples of freedom of people. One girl in a Kurdish city was arrested and condemned to death in a prison. One day before they executed her, in social networks, they found such a photos you see there, people with their gun, or only photos from the gun, and they wrote only execution, uprising. That was all. The next day, the girl was free. Not only condemned to 10 years or 5 years or no, free. She came free. We had another two persons in Karaj prison and the near of Tehran. People went at the night of the execution beside the prison and demonstrated there and called always executing uprising. And the two would they didn't execute them. So the only way to stop this dead machine is fighting. It's what you see simply if you go on the streets of Iran. Why this show? Why European governments do this show? I believe they don't want Iranian regime to go. They never wanted. It is their government. What they want is that they don't go to China. The same government should work with us. That is the question. We saw at that time of uprising, lots of intellectuals were collecting money for Iranian. Iranian, the son of the ex-king of Iran, told he gives millions of dollars to help the workers in Iran to go to strike, as workers in Iran are like mazdoor.
Paid agents,
like people go to the war. I don't know what you call it. Zoltner. Mercenaries. The workers of Iran did their strike when they needed. We know some workers, Ismail Bakhshi, I called about these two big production centers, told we never received not even 1 cent of help and we don't want. Meysam Alimehti, one of the leaders of the steel fabric in Haftappa, in Ahvaz, he talked the same. They don't want money from anybody. If they have the strike fund, they make it themselves. Working class is not a battler on the street. They work, they want their own, they make their own fight. And if they don't fight and they are poor, they have to be poor. We are not like religious leaders. They are people that fight, they are fighting. And the reason they are collecting money can be two. I believe can be two. Maybe they are very good people. I don't know everybody. But one of them can be, I would turn to the intermediate person. So if you give money for the Iranian workers, even if I give them all the money, I am the intermediate person, so I got a power. I got microphone. And the other one is, the money who goes to the worker in Iran, what happened? You cannot open an account officially for the workers in Iran. So one of the workers have an account in his name, under his name, and report this money. So this worker gets a kind of power, and I don't need to tell you what happens if somebody gets power. So it is a corruption, what they are trying to put on the working class movement. That is the only reason. We see thousands and thousands of euros geld, money which you collect in Europe or in North America. It's nothing. You cannot feed some millions of workers in Iran. Maybe if they had an organization who was fighting and needed a gun or something like this, you could tell, okay, we help them to in this way, as you helped in Nicaragua, even Nicaragua, El Salvador. If you see people who were intermediate at that time of the war, all of them, I call all, maybe one or two are not that corrupt. All of them got corrupt. I don't need to talk about Daniel Ortega. Also, we are talking about a system. The working class is a fighter class. They have to fight because they need to fight. They don't do it because it's like hobby. So, meanwhile, what happens in Iran? We see a bit, the movement goes down. At the same time, we see the government of Iran is taking more place. And May this year, they put one new law which says that all goods of the all properties of the government should be privatized, including hospitals and schools. The very important point in this law is not privatization. We know every government, we don't talk about Pinochet or Videla. They are all the same, actually. The privatization is needed, and it's not some gusto. But what's very important is that paragraph 5 of this law says that every person who is in this committee of privatization is impugned to what happened, what he does. I have never seen an impunity law before it happens anything. So they are securing their own people. They can do what they want. And they are always impugned per law. It's legally. So that's one thing that's happening. But in last week of the March, all suddenly, the Iranian foreign minister and Saudi foreign minister have a meeting which is with intermediary of China. The two countries, they didn't have embassies. They had like they were enemies, and Saudis paid a lot at the son of the Shah and lots of other oppositors. They made a TV against of Iran, so it was like they made everything against of Iran. All suddenly, they've been friends. We don't know what happens. In 28th of March, some 2 weeks after, Saudi's government make like a demand of being member of Shanghai Group. So, Saudis get in peace with Iran. They try to be a member of Shanghai Group. At the 5th of April this year, Macron went with the chief of EU, they went to China. That was the first time France accepted to buy to sell something to China and be paid with Chinese money and not dollar. At the same day, I don't know if it's happening like it's happening, Iranian people and Saudis, they've been in China and they declare they will open their embassies next days. It is open both of them. At 7th of April, Saudis declared they would get out of
Yemen.
You know all about Yemen war, maybe very, very short sequence of it, because it's not Ukraine, because they are not white, because Europeans don't have any interest directly there. Therefore, the governments of Europe don't talk about it. But in Yemen, there are 100,000 of people in hunger and their deaths, and that is actually the war between Iran and Saudis. And at 7th of April, Saudis declare they would take their soldiers out of Yemen. And why they did the war, nobody knows. And the next day, the Emirates, United Emirates of Arabs, take, they don't tell we do it, they take back all the soldiers from Yemen. So we see, maybe for Yemenis, it's a good news that they have a kind of short time they can breathe. But it's happening something. What I try to do, or what we try to tell you, is it's happening something in Middle East, which it changed the capitalism in whole Middle East, maybe in whole Eastern countries. And I think it doesn't matter what is this change, but it is sure that it's no good news for the working class. It was a meeting between Turkey, Iran, Saudis, and Russians in Moscow so that the Saudis would help Turkey to rebuild their economy, but it's only half of the truth. Since 11 o'clock last night, the Turkish army is bombarding the Kurdish part of Iraq because of PKK or with the resistance groups in Rojava. I think it's the first place which it would be damaged is Rojava. The other thing is, at the same time, we see that Syria goes back to the Arab League. And not even one country says no. And we ask us, how is possible? 20 years, they didn't let him in because he's a dictator and everything. And all suddenly, he's there. And one embassy after the other one opened, reopened in Syria. I've heard, I didn't find any map, but I've heard, that's a plan between Saudis, Iranis, and Turkish government to open one free zone of industry in Iraq so that the capital of Iran, capital of Turkey, and capital of Saudis can work there. And the cheap workers are Iranian, Iraqi, Chinese workers. And I tell you now, Iranian workers, the Iraqi workers in, for instance, Kurdistan, Iraq, they are working there. They earn, I think, some about $600 a month. I know one Iranian engineer working there, $500 a month. So you have like ranks, and it's again this ethnification of the working class. They have like Iraqi, Chinese, Irani. And the Iranis are not the people from Tehran who go, they are working class. They can be Arabs, they can be Kurds, they can be Baluchis. So you have the same system. And we are not talking about 3 million Afghanis who are living in Iran without any right, without any right. They made a law, if you want to buy bread in Iran, you have to pay with card. And Afghanis cannot open a bank account unless they have a
Identification.
and Iran doesn't give them. I know one Afghani in Frankfurt who was born in Iran. He never has been in the school. He's 40 years old nearly, because it wasn't allowed. They didn't allow them to go to the school. So we are this mixing of the ethnification of the working class is actually the second step to make cheaper working class. And that's what they try to do there. What's happened on... I just make it short. Thank you. Oh. It's because I talked about against of religion. I've tried to find out, it was some weeks ago, the date. Iranian and Pakistanis opened one free zone on the border of both countries. It's interesting. The land is Baluchi land, Iranian part and Pakistani part. Nobody asked the Baluchis if they would work there, they have any interest there. But both of the countries are interested to make this point because it is the part of the bridge to go to India. So the European can go from Germany until India through this all these ways. And again, I found another picture, another new about a trainway from Iran to Afghanistan, and it was during the time before Taliban. It means the Americans were informed that they want to do it. So you have a train goes to China, to Afghanistan, from Afghanistan to Iran, from Iran to Turkey. So they are closing these ways. It means that's exactly to land grabbing, which I talked now about Baluchistan, the land grabbing you would see in all these parts and moving the working class from one place to the other, cutting the social life. There are lots of these plans. I think I'll talk very much, but you can see that none of them is illegal. None of them is from a lefty. They are all in European Union. There is a website, and you can see these maps. These maps are not always to do, but they are things that you know the capitalists are thinking about. And if we want to organize, we have to organize before they come. If they come, it's too late. And that's what I think we have to rethink our politics. We have heard from Chilean and Colombian comrades. They were talking that the uprising was there and they were not organized and they didn't know what to do. It happens to us the same. It happens to you maybe. But we have seen the France. And if we don't do it, the rights are not... sitting at home and looking, no, just. They do their part.
And here I would like to add that what Bahram is telling you is just to wrap it up, is to say that because the Islamic Republic has been working a lot on its image as an anti-imperialist power in the zone. And many of the leftists, especially in Latin America, they have bought this image. And there are lots of people who are supporting the Islamic Republic that are not Iranians, that are leftists from other countries, that are doing this because they have believed that Iran is an anti-imperialist power in the Middle East. But all these things we are showing you is just to see that Iran is only another part, another small part, another small actor of the whole capitalist plan that is working in the world, all over the world. So if you understand that, then we will understand better why all these uprisings and the reasons and the repressions and the ways of resistance are similar to each other. So what we have learned from this last uprising is that of course, there is a need to organize in other ways. Although, for example, something also interesting in this uprising was that in the neighborhoods neighborhood committees were created, and they were also something new, and they were autonomous, and they worked pretty well. And we also, for example, all the movement had like a duration of 6 months approximately, and then it was because of the same reasons of people getting tired, the violence that everybody suffered on the streets, the number of deaths and tortured and disappeared and so on, the people who lost their eyes, all of these things, they make people stay home maybe for a bit. But we still have, today when we are talking on the streets, we have the workers, the pensionists, the teachers that are having their small protests everywhere. We have in Balochistan, in Zahedan, every Friday, people are on the street again. And we have been hearing all over the Jinnah's movement that there is this solidarity with different ethnical groups. I mean, because they have always tried to tell us that if a revolution happens, then Iran is getting separated, and every ethnical group is going to make their own country. So they have been always trying to terrify us from this. And people on the street, they have showed that this is not going to happen, that they are working in solidarity, that this is not a matter of separatism, it's a matter of class war, a matter of the women fight, a matter of ethnical groups fight. So this is much bigger than what they want to show us. And I think the last point that we would mention, maybe if we have like 5 minutes, is about the opposition in the diaspora.
Yeah, maybe. I think we showed you how is the situation, how we see the situation in Iran, and how we see this whole European or politicians movement. We have out of Iran some opposition, for sure, in Iran too. They do always, you see, they try to make meeting with this or other politician. They go lots of them go with Greens and ask the Greens to help our poor people, and the same Greens who are selling the gun without any at the government of Iran, at Turkey, and etc. So we believe this government needs this opposition. So they are like Siamese twins. One of them without the other cannot live. Iranian government needs this opposition, because if there is no such opposition, you can see the workers, they stand up themselves. You can see people in Kurdistan, they organize themselves in the committees. And it's interesting to know that this idea from committees was born in Ahvaz, in the fabric of Ahvaz. So you see this intersectional of the movements, they have influence to each other, and they don't need somebody over their top. And the same way, this opposition needs this government. The opposition, or part of this opposition, you see, needs to see they are killing us, and we need help. And if you see, in all of countries, there are Iranian opposition, they try to make some projects, to have some funds to help people in Iran. I don't know if they help anybody. But if I would have been in Iran, I couldn't have wanted somebody who is a criminal to help me to be free. So it is what we think about this opposition. The real opposition is very small group. There are some very small communist collectives, some very small maybe anarchist collectives. There are very small persons who are not in any organization, but the mass who goes with the flag of nationalism on the street, it's not the opposition. It is part of the system. And that's what we believe to tell you, comrades, to see if you see this opposition, to ask what they are, how you can go against the fascism in Germany on the street, and if Iranian fascism are there, you go with them and, they're Iranian. So I think even if you do it, then I can stay there and say, it is a kind of racism. So you think we are very stupid and we don't know what fascism is. That's the fascism who killed since 100 years all ethnic movement. That are the people they killed. They put the women all these years out of the society. They didn't let them to be free. So it is what's happening. I don't believe that we in exile can do anything very big for Iranian people. We can do, if we could do, we can do with you. And if you see us the other side of the table, you can believe we are not the real opposition. That's all.
Yeah, and just to end this, it is clear that whenever a government of the West has been supporting these movements in Iran, especially the last uprising, any time that they have been supporting it or their different parties and groups, it's only because they are losing Iranian investment in their countries, Iranian economical relationships with them, because Iran is going towards the East and they want Iran to come back. So it's like a fight between powers in economical and capital wars. And if we are conscious of this, we can say, okay, if we are asking, we are looking for a solution, we should only trust our revolutionary powers. We shouldn't look at any government, not ours, not yours, not anybody's. It's the only way to do something here is just to look down, not to look up.
Thank you very much. Some comrades in Germany did a collection of some article. If somebody needs it outside, you put if you want to support some, I think, 4 or 5 euros for each of them. They are a collection of different articles inside.